Welcome to Torah Mecha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Melachim Perek Hei, Melachim Aleph, Chapter 5. Chapter 5 is a record of the vast and success and wonderful nature of Shlomo's kingdom. Pasuk Aleph starts out by describing the borders. Ushlomo haya moshel b'chol hamamlachot min hanahar eretz plishtim v'ad gevul mitzrayim makishim mincha v'ovdim et shlomo kol yimei chayav. Let's just take a minute and realize how large Shlomo's country was. Shlomo ruled over all of the lands from the Euphrates River in the north all the way to the land of the Plishtim and all the way down to the border with Egypt. And any other nation that lived in this land, they were vassal states to Shlomo and had to pay him taxes. No one in any of the lands surrounding Israel is contesting Shlomo's absolute dominance over the area. They bring him gifts and they recognize his stature. How different is this than both the time of the Shoftim, where Bnei Israel were constantly being threatened by nations that surrounded them, as well as the Canaanim, who actually still lived in their country. And this is also extremely different than the time of Shaul and David, who were constantly engaged in warfare with their neighbors, and actually both of them made their name by fighting wars, both against the Plishtim and also some other nations surrounded them. They were constantly under pressure. And Shlomo is not. Shlomo is living in peace. And the consequence of this type of atmosphere is twofold. In the realm of politics, Bnei Israel had peace and security. They didn't have to be worried about being attacked at any time. In the economic arena, they had the time and the energy to develop their own land. The country didn't have to pour money into wars and could therefore focus more on internal development. And they even had extra income coming in from other countries that would pay tribute to them. Furthermore, their location on the trade route also was a tremendous source of income to them. The Psukim described just the amount of food and resources it took to feed Shlomo's palace staff and administration, giving us a clue to how large and how mighty Shlomo's kingdom was. Vayhi lechem Shlomo liyom echad shloshim kor solet v'shishim kor kemach. Shlomo's provisions for one day were 30 kor of fine flour and 3 square measures of meal, a tremendous amount of food. In addition, he would use Pasukimol, Verse 3, Asara bakar bri'im ba'asara bakar ri'i u'me'atzon levad me'ayal utzvi b'chamor b'rabim ba'avusim. He would slaughter per day 10 fat oxen, 20 oxen that were from the pastures, and 100 sheep. And this is besides all the other animals that he would use, the gazelles and the fowl and all different types of delicacies that were served to Shlomo's administration and the people that worked for him. And this was all provided by the provinces that Shlomo set up that we learned about in the last parak. And this is noted in Pasuk Zion, verse 7. V'chalkalu hanitzavim ha'ele et ha'melech Shlomo, v'et kol ha'karev et shulchan ha'melech Shlomo, ish chanesho lo ya'adru davar. These people, these officers that were the head of those 12 provinces that we learned about, they never missed a month. Every month, everyone was able to provide this much support and they never missed out. So if the provinces were able to provide this much money, that means they themselves were doing very well. This wasn't everything that they had that they gave to Shlomo. This was just a part of what they were actually making. And the pasuk tells us that yes, the Jews themselves were doing very well. Pasuk hey, Vayeshev Yehuda v'Yisrael levetach. Yehuda and Yisrael were living in security. Ish tachat gafno v'tachat te'inato. Each person under his vine and under his fig tree. Midan va'ad Be'er Sheva, from the north, from Dan all the way in the north, all the way down to Be'er Sheva in the south, kol yemei Shlomo, all the way, all the days of Shlomo. This description of each person sitting under his vine and fig tree was picked up by later Nevi'im Micha and Zechariah when they are envisioning a utopia, the end of days, a time when people don't have to worry about going to battle and can instead focus on growing their farms and peace. And this is actually their vision of utopia, this beautiful idea of people sitting in their farms and enjoying the produce that they were able to grow. And interestingly, George Washington actually quoted from this phrase from Micha, the Micha, which was echoing here about Shlomo, in his letter to the Hebrew congregation in Newport, Rhode Island. And George Washington wrote, "May the children of the stock of Abraham who dwell in this land continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of the other inhabitants, while everyone shall sit safely under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid." So this phrase here describing that Yirmiyahu used to describe Shlomo has lived in the imagination of the people since this time. This idea of Acharit HaYamim, the end of days, is a time where people can almost get back to the time of Shlomo and they can tend to the simple pleasures of life. And Shlomo's country is developed in other ways as well. Shlomo has 40,000 stalls for his horses and 12,000 chariots. This is a clear indication that even though Shlomo is not fighting wars, he's clearly developing an armed force, and the Malbim notes this, to scare away anybody who would start up with him. And what we see here is Shlomo developing one of the gifts that Hashem gave him back in Perek Gimel in chapter 3 in his dream that he has in Giv'on. Hashem promises Shlomo Osher, wealth. And Shlomo here is developing that gift. Remember, Shlomo there asked for a Lev Shomea Mishpat, a heart that can hear justice, and Hashem gave him in return other gifts. He gave him, one of them was Osher. And then there's a second gift that Shlomo is developing in this parak as well, and that is his wisdom. If you remember, that was another thing that Hashem gave Shlomo because he was happy with the way that Shlomo asked Hashem for something. And over here it says in Pasuk Tet, verse 9, Vayitain Elokim Chachma Lishlomo Utuna Harbe Ma'od Verochav Lev Kachol Al Svat Hayam. Hashem gave Shlomo wisdom and understanding that was a tremendous amount. It was wide and vast as the sea on the shores of the ocean. And we, using the phrase that we saw in the last parak to signify B'nai Israel's fulfillment of the promise to Abraham, the sand on the banks of the sea, here that phrase applies to the vastness of the wisdom of Shlomo. And in explaining the unusual nature of Shlomo's wisdom, the Pasuk actually uses political terms. In verse 10, Vaterev chachmat Shlomo michachmat kol b'nei kedem. Shlomo's wisdom was better than all the people of B'nai Kedem and all the wise people of Mitzrayim. Shlomo's was higher level. People would come from all the other nations just to hear the wisdom of Shlomo and to see how smart he was. So Shlomo, we see, it's not just that Shlomo is smart, but he's using his wisdom and understanding to turn Israel into an intellectual hub, into a political experience that other countries want to come and see what it's like to have such a wise king. So now, this economic and intellectual development of Israel is different than the nation we have come to know. Since the time that B'nai Israel left Mitzrayim, the Jews have always been fighting for their lives. They are always on the brink of disaster. It's hard to recognize this new country, this powerhouse of achievement, a cosmopolitan country that others look to for wisdom, that other countries use for their trade routes that pay tribute to them. Even Hiram, the king of Tzur in the north, who had a relationship with David, reaches out to Shlomo and he says he wants to extend his pact with David to his son. And Shlomo, this works very well for him because he has his eye on the beautiful and unmatched cedar trees of Lebanon that he wishes to use to build the Beit HaMikdash. Hiram, in kind, wants the produce that Israel is producing by the barrel. Remember, we said they had time and the effort that they could do to develop their country internally, they were actually producing a lot of food. So they make a pact. Hiram will provide as much cedar wood as Shlomo wants, and Shlomo, in turn, will send food. And Shlomo actually starts right away in Pasuk Kaf Hei 25. Shlomo natan l'chiram esrim elaf korchitim mikolat leveito esrim kor shemen katit ko yitain Shlomo l'chiram shana v'shana. Shlomo every single year gave Chiram a tremendous amount of food, 20,000 kor of wheat and that he would use for his house, and 20 kor of this special oil. And That's the trade that Shlomo makes with Hiram for these cedar trees. Now, in order to accomplish these tasks, Shlomo has to put a second tax on the people. And this is a tax of workers that are going to travel to the north to Tzidon and work with Hiram's workers to get the trees and bring them to Yerushalayim. So Shlomo collected 30,000 people for the job, and he divided them into three different groups, 10,000 at a time, and they would each go up for 1 month to Tzur, and then return to their homes and farms for 2 months. We read about another 150,000 people that worked in Shlomo's quarries and on the mountains, collecting stones, both precious ones and large building stones, that they brought to Yerushalayim to get ready to build the Beit HaMikdash. This parak presents a picture of what the possibilities for Bnei Israel can be, with a king at their head who is smart, who serves Hashem, and who's not just able to function in the political arena, but to dominate it. When we read through this parak, however, we can't but help to feel that there's maybe an undercurrent of something that seems a little bit off. And this is because the psukim really that describe Shlomo's wealth and grandeur, they are really pulling us in different directions. On the one hand, you have the opening pasuk that we read, pasuk hey, Vayashev Yisrael Lavetach, Ish Tachat Gafno, Tachat Tinato, Midan Vad, Be'er Sheva, Kol Yimei Shlomo. Bnei Israel lives securely, each person under his vine and his fig tree, all throughout the whole country, throughout the time of Shlomo. And Dat Mikra points out that this pasuk actually echoes something that we read earlier in Vayikra Perek 26, in the beginning of Parsha B'chukotai. Parsha B'chukotai is known for the curses, but actually there's a few psukim in the beginning of Parsha B'chukotai that say, if you do follow my laws, this is what will happen to you. And listen to this pasuk. One of the promises that is made to Bnei Israel, if they do follow the laws, v'hisig lachem dayish et batzir, u'batzir yasig et zera, v'achaltem lachmachem lasova, v'yashavtem levetach b'artzachem. You're going to have so much produce, says Moshe, that when you're threshing, you're going to meet the person who's sowing, and the person who's sowing is going to meet the person who's planting. Meaning, it's not that you'll have to wait; almost there won't be any lag time between the planting and the growing and the harvesting. Everything has so much that it's going to be like a continuous cycle, and you will live in safety in your land. It really is even using the same words about the produce and the safety. And that really does seem to indicate that Bnei Israel and Shlomo at the time are following in the ways of Hashem. And we see that throughout. Shlomo attributes his wisdom to Hashem. Shlomo is bringing Hashem into the people through his wisdom, through what he says. And yet, on the other hand, there are a number of psukim that point us in the opposite direction, especially the next pasuk. Pasuk Vav, and that is Vayhi Shlomo Arbeim Elef Urot Susim Limrakavo Ushnayim Shneimasar Elef Preshim. Shlomo had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. Now, we already commented on this verse, but I want to look at it now in a different way. Radak there cites Chazal, who criticized Shlomo for going against one of the dictums of the king, that a king should limit the amounts of horses he has. And that is because horses represent power. And the king always has to be very, very careful that he doesn't have too much power, that the power does not get to his head and make him think that he's above the law. And in a similar vein, we know that a second commandment to the king is Lo yarbelo kesef zahav. A king should not have too much money. So while there's no way to quantify what too much is, the richness and the excess of this perek seem in stark contrast with the way the Jewish king is supposed to act. And perhaps this is an eerie foreshadowing of the reason that we'll see later in chapter 11 for Shlomo's downfall, and that is the last of the three laws of a king, Lo yarbelo nashim, he shouldn't have too many wives. The undertone of this parak pushes and challenges the reader to consider what is the correct way to be a materialistic and powerful society. What is the way to use wealth? Does wealth help to build a good society, or does it take a person away from his or her values? Is it too dangerous? And we don't get an answer from this perek. Here in our perek, we're at a pinnacle of success. The Jews are enjoying a status they could have only dreamed of in years past. But we know that this perek does actually present a challenge. And it will be up to them and to Shlomo to see if they can harness the material blessing and political power to create a society that is at the same time humble, reflective, kind to people who don't have as much, and a society that uses its richness to serve Hashem. Thank you for studying together, Eloi Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.